The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Cosi. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Cosi starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Cosi.org.
Hey everybody, welcome to I Want to Say It. You know I do. You know I want to say focus on the family.
One day I'll know confidently the name of our podcast.
Yeah.
Welcome to Don't Make Me Come Back There, which does not have any F's in it, but It's a funny podcast about family, which makes me want to say we are focused on the family. We have a funny focus on the family here at Don't Make Me Come Back There. I'm Dustin Nickerson, comedian and host of this, and here with the artist formerly known as CT English. Stephen English, how you doing, buddy?
I'm good.
Good. We are. We have a really fun episode today with Ken Garr. Ken Garr is a Los Angeles-based stand-up comedian, originally from Chicago, and we talked to him about his life growing up in the Midwest, and particularly growing up as the youngest kid with a good chunk of older siblings, and what that was like being the baby of the family. So enjoy the episode. We talk a lot about again, you know, it's a really unique life. Being the youngest, you know, the relationship with the parents, the relationship with the siblings, the relationships with the siblings when they're much older, all those kind of things. So you can follow him at comedian Ken Garr. That's KENGARR. That's his Twitter and his Instagram handle. So, yeah. How you doing, Stephen?
I'm good.
Good, man.
Feeling good.
Yeah. I have a question for you. Yeah. So we had our most exciting event of the summer so far. Just a couple weeks ago, we are at Coronado. Did I say that correctly?
Yes, Coronado, Crown City.
We're at Coronado. We're at the beach, and me and my daughter and my middle child Gloria and Joel were all out swimming, and we're having a good time. And Gloria steps on something, or thinks she steps on a little rock. She comes running in, and she had gotten stung by a stingray. Which I did not know this is crazy common. Have you? You grew up around beaches and stuff?
Yeah, I've been.
What's your experience with the stingrays?
I've never been. My brothers for sure have. I've never been stung by a stingray. I've been stung by a jellyfish once, but I.
But it wasn't memorable?
I'm too fast of a swimmer. I'm just too fast. I'm just zipping around.
Nobody's swimming when
it
happens.
I'm just zipping around.
You're having when you're walking. They lay on the ground.
There's a Portuguese man of war came at me. I juked him. I juked him in the water.
Do ankles. I know you have no ankles or bones or cartilage of any
broke
type.
Them. You would have broke them.
That's why you look like that. You did have ankles, but I broke them. But your brothers did.
Yeah.
So, like, that's a common thing, the stingray.
Yeah,
I had no idea.
Yeah.
And I've seen that it's very common at Coronado.
See, I didn't know that.
Yeah, I looked it up, and, like, last year they had a two-day span where 60 people got stung. You got to shut down that beach.
Yeah. Yeah. At guy 15, you go, you know what?
That's a wrap.
They're just doing the Jaws thing.
Just head 15 just minutes north. You know, yeah. We have beaches the whole coastline. It was very dramatic. She has a very high pain tolerance. She's easily our toughest kid. Sorry, other two kids. But she was crying quite a bit. And I had the, like, all right, I'm going to be a dad moment. But it was like, the lifeguards were almost done, but it was like bleeding. I was like, okay, something's bad here. Even if this was just a rock, like, we need to get some bandages and stuff on this.
Bactine or something.
Bactine, yeah. Hey, you got like some just gasoline she can dip this in. That'll clean it right up. And so I'm like, all right, I got to take her to the lifeguard stand, and I got to get there quick because they're closing right now. And I realized just how much of a pansy dad I am, carrying 50 pounds of dead weight for about 200 yards in the sand.
Yeah.
while your kid's crying, I was like, Gloria, you got to help me out. You got to, can you throw an arm over my neck?
You're no Kevin Costner, man.
What's that reference?
Bodyguard.
Oh, Bodyguard.
He did it in the rain.
At that point, Whitney Houston may have weighed less than my child, to be honest. Whitney was real thin for a lot of different reasons then. No, but I felt pathetic. I was like, I was just shaking. Just the biceps were on fire, on fire. And I was like, I could sack a potatoes her over the shoulder, but that's...
That just looks...
That's a bad look.
Yeah. Just a certain look.
And then the funny thing was we got to the lifeguard stand, finally it was like 8:58, and you would think they were a Jamba Juice trying to get out of there 2 minutes early. Trying to convince a 19-year-old to stay maybe 2 minutes past the clock is impossible. He's like, oh, I don't even need to look. I know what it is. And I go, okay. He didn't tell me what it is. I know what it is. Okay, is this a game show? Do I have to guess?
Yeah.
And he goes, stingray. I go, okay. He goes, do you live close? I go, I live about 15 minutes. He's like, okay, well, you need to get her foot in water ASAP. I was like, well, you know, sir, we're at a beach right now, which means my car is at least 10 minutes away.
Right, right.
Like, and he's like, well, yeah, you just got to get her foot in hot water. I was like, well, is there anything you can do for me? He's like, we're about to pack up. He didn't say yes or no. And I was like, but is there anything you could do for me?
Right.
Mind the crying 8-year-old right in front of me. And he goes, well, we have these stingray bags. I was like, you have a specific bag?
Bag.
And he spent what literally took 45 seconds to open stingray bag that had a stingray on it and put hot water on it and not make any eye contact with me and like roll his eyes while he did it. I was like, this is it. San Diego's finest right here.
That's not a job for, I mean, it's a job that only 19-year-olds have, but it's not a job that 19-year-olds should
have. Do you know why they get it? Is because they still have good vision. That's the only reason. That's the only reason. Once you hit 27, like, and things are a little blurry, you can't be a beach lifeguard anymore.
And they don't feel like a jerk when you drive in, like, those Jeeps without, like, the...
Yes.
Like, they're the only people who can drive those and not feel like a complete...
Yeah.
Just... Idiot.
Tool. Yeah. Yeah, it was... So, the funny thing is, so it hurts for an hour... And it was almost to the dot, like an hour it was done. And then my 8-year-old, and I was so proud of her, milked it so hard. She wrapped like a full wrap, like knee down past her foot for like 2 days. I'm like, Gloria, you're fine.
Yeah.
But I was kind of proud of her at the same time. Sure. She's like, can I get a bell in bed? I was like, no, you may not.
My kid, go to the bell store for me.
Yeah. Anyways, that's the middle child. But this episode is talking about being the youngest child with Ken Gar here. Make sure you follow us on all of our social medias. Yeah. We are Don't Make Me Come Back There. That's our handle on Twitter and Instagram. You can find us on Facebook as well. And if you want to shoot us an email about topics or guests that you'd like to have on, we are Don't Make Me Come Back There at gmail.com. And make sure and rate and subscribe. And all that fun stuff. Thanks for checking out. Enjoy this episode with Ken Gar.
See you guys.
Hey, everybody, here with Ken Gar.
Hey, Ken. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, and Stephen English is listening over here. He's not allowed to talk. And Jen, hi, Jen.
Hi.
We can hear you a little bit. Thanks for coming down. And how's your week in San Diego going so far? You guys got here Sunday for her work?
Yeah, no, it's been going great. I drove back to L.A. Monday night for my radio show. I have a radio show in L.A.
Okay.
That I do, and then I drove back
last
night.
What's the radio
show?
I don't know that.
It's the Kim and Ken show. It's on Dash Radio.
Okay.
And Dash Radio is kind of like Spotify, Pandora. It's like the little guy that's coming up.
All right.
But yeah, but no, we have every Monday we have a live radio show from 9 to 11.
There you go. That plug on this podcast is going to take it.
Double it up. Yeah, it's big, blowing it up, guys.
Yeah, that's
make
really
sure
next.
You tune in. Yeah. Usually we save to the plugs till the end, but we just got
We got right to it. Any shows coming up?
Yeah.
But they won't, the dates, we don't know when this is going to release, so all dates, put them way out.
Yeah.
2019 looking. January 2019. Well, good. What have you even been doing the day? Because she's at the conference, so doing spots at night. This is your first spot. Well, I guess you went back up to LA last night.
Yeah, but I sat at the pool all day today and wrote.
On your dime, your company's dime, Jen.
Yeah, so my girlfriend's in San Diego for a conference, and she was nice enough to invite me to stay with her, and I was like, all right, you go conference, I'll go pool. And I was literally at the pool, and I was like writing all day at the pool until my laptop died, and I'm like, well, I'm just done writing now.
Well, so, it's a sign from above.
Yeah.
The Lord wants me to Sabbath.
Yeah, so I just rested in the saltwater filtered whatever pool.
Ooh, it's one of the saltwater pools.
Yeah, It's a new thing, right?
Yeah.
Like,
it's
most
gross.
Of the pools are now saltwatery.
Yeah.
Because it's cheaper to maintain.
No way. Give me a big chlorinated.
Oh, that's what we
bleached
grew up.
My skin.
Yeah, we grew up with like bloodshot eyes all summer.
Yeah.
And just wrinkled fingers.
I don't need goggles.
Yeah.
I'll find the penny.
Dude, I think all we wore were swimsuits in the summer.
Yeah.
That's all we ever wore.
Well, where'd you grow up? You grew up in Chicago, Midwest?
Yeah, I grew up in the south side of Chicago.
Okay, that's the good side, right?
Yeah, well, depends on who you ask, right? But it's kind of like the blue-collar cops, firemen, teachers kind of south side of Chicago.
Right.
Gang members, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, all the blue-collar work.
Yeah.
Cops, gang members.
Yeah, stabbings.
Yeah,
you know.
The people wearing blue. All
right.
The blue.
Some reds, depending.
The firemen and the Bloods. Yeah. So you grew up outside, how far from the city?
So in the city, but like 20 minutes from downtown.
Okay.
Yeah, 25 minutes. Yeah.
I feel like I knew you were from Chicago before you ever told me you were from Chicago.
Really?
Just the vibe.
Yeah.
Chicago, to me, it's one of my favorite places to visit and to play because they have this weird hybrid, and maybe I'm off here, this is just my experience, of like Northeast punk, like I'm mean, I'm a jerk, and Midwest politeness. Like, it's a little bit of both. Like, they'll let you be mean a little bit, but they'll also open the door for you.
Yeah, like, someone put it really great. He basically said, like, you're like one of the nicest guys I've ever met, but I can tell you've got a switch in the back of your head.
Right.
It's like Ken, he's great, but I don't want to mess with him.
Yeah.
I'm like, I don't know about how accurate that is. But
and I don't think
like
that's true of the Midwest. I think that's true of Chicago.
Right. It's
because
exactly
you
it.
Are a big, big city near the East Coast.
Right.
But you're kind of Midwest. Midwest claims you, but let's you're nothing like
it's
the rest
so
of the
funny
Midwest.
Because everyone from Chicago will say, well, yeah, I grew up in the Midwest, but like anybody outside of Chicago is like, oh, you're from the East Coast, Chicago. And I mean, like, it's so confusing to people from Chicago. Like, no, we're from the Midwest.
Let's not
like,
get maps involved.
Yeah,
and this whole thing. Well, like, oh, right, isn't Ohio further east than Illinois?
Yeah.
Nobody would ever guess that.
Right.
When you say Ohio, I'm like middle of the country.
Right.
It touches Nebraska.
Yeah.
But just Chicago has a different. But as soon as you get out of Chicago, I believe that I'm in the Midwest.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
I've done some gigs.
You don't have to drive that far outside of Chicago to be like, we got a Subway sandwich shop here. It's pretty fancy. You're like, oh, okay.
And it's new.
Yeah.
That's awesome. So you grew up, was your dad blue collar?
A firefighter.
A fiery fighter.
A fiery fighter. Super savage.
Your dad's a firefighter.
My grandpa was a firefighter. My dad and both my brothers are firefighters.
Oh, so where does everyone land on you?
Not the fire. I went to college.
Well,
Yeah. I walked into one fire. I'm like, we're good.
Really hot.
Yeah.
Really hot.
Smoke is hurting my eyes. I teared up instantly.
I don't know how you guys do this.
Yeah.
Is that true? You actually walked into a fire?
Oh, yeah. My dad used to take us to work, and I was putting fire out in projects in Chicago when I was 12.
You can't take your kid to put a fire out?
He did.
What?
Yeah.
That's not...
Oh, yeah.
Of the take your kid to work day, it's not taking him to the office.
Oh, like, yeah.
Hey, kid, hold the point low.
Yeah. And you'd go to the firehouse. You'd stay. They work 24-hour shifts.
Right.
So you'd stay with them all 24 hours. You had a fire, the coat, the boots, the helmet.
Sounds adorable.
All of it. Yeah. You would dress, and then he would take you. Now when my dad was in the Cabrini Green projects, which are like the worst projects in the whole world.
Okay.
And so we would literally go to a fire, and a lot of times they had garbage chutes. And the kids there would throw matches down the fire chute and it would catch fire. And so you would have to like climb 12 flights of stairs.
Right.
With basically what
that
they call a hand pump.
That's a bad pastime, by the way. Of hobbies to do.
Oh, yeah.
Let's just throw a match down here.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it brings the firemen out and they wanted to like ride the rig and hang out. So
you're like, we do this for free at carnivals and stuff, you guys. Yeah. That comes to your school.
Not a lot of carnivals showing up at Cabrini Green Project House.
That's fair. Yeah.
Like, hey, you want to do the rifle game? Yeah, I'm really good at it. I'm really good at the rifle game. Like, oh. We lost all of our stuffed animals immediately.
Yeah.
The prizes are gone.
That's fantastic. So you got a taste of that earlier, and you're like, I'm going to go away from the family business.
Yeah. And you know, truth be told, you had to be 18 to take the test, and the test only comes out every every 10 years. So I was 17 when the first test came out, so I couldn't take it. And then I was 27 when the other test came out. And by that point, I had already started a career. And
You can only become a fireman every 10 years?
In Chicago. Yeah, it's such a popular... Because it's the benefits are so amazing.
Oh, I see.
And, you know, and so like 30,000 people will sign up to take the test, and they'll have a list of 10,000 people. You know, and so it's just such a great job that everyone wants to be a firefighter in Chicago.
Right, but and both your brothers got in.
Yeah.
So you have the two brothers and then...
My sister, she's a principal.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
So she's a... do you guys say grammar school or elementary school?
Elementary, yeah, but we'd have went with you. We could have made the leap.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you made fun of a lot because I go grammar school. Like, what's grammar school? Some sort of freak, you know.
It's grammar school. Right?
Yeah.
It's
so she's a grammar school or elementary school principal. Yeah.
Big time.
Yeah. She's got like 14 degrees. She's the smartest person in the world. Yeah.
So you grew up, that's what I wanted to talk the most about. So you grew up the youngest of four.
Yep.
Mom and dad both in the picture.
Oh, yeah.
This is a very...
Married 54 years.
Wow. This is the most, like, Chicago thing I've ever heard in my life.
Yeah. Barry and Maryland. Grew up on the south side.
Barry
White
and
Sox.
Maryland. Yep. Barry not and Maryland. Not easy to say. Barryland. Combo.
We call them Mare and Bear.
Mare and Bear. That's the cutest thing I've ever heard.
Yeah, they're adorable.
54 years.
Yep. They're high school sweethearts.
Get out of here.
Three older siblings. My oldest brother and I are 12 years apart. He's got five daughters. I have 14 nieces and nephews.
Holy smokes. Okay, so the gap also very Midwest of you. Are you Catholic or were you raised religious?
Lutheran.
Lutheran.
So here's what's interesting. I grew up in an Irish Catholic neighborhood, but I'm English Protestant. And so I would just walk around on a horse, be like, pay your taxes!
And they're like, we don't get it. We're really young for these references.
What is happening right now?
But I seem that you enjoy this bit. Was that a point of conflict with other families or anything? I mean, or was everybody pretty open-minded about it?
No, I mean, it was just kind of the neighborhood. But what was different for me is that I didn't go to Catholic grammar school, so I didn't know a lot of kids in the neighborhood. Mm. I was shipped off to a public school and took a bus.
Okay.
And so because I didn't go to Catholic grammar school, I wasn't really kind of part of the crew.
Oh, I had, like in the neighborhood?
Yeah, in the neighborhood, just because they didn't know me. I didn't go to school with them.
Yeah.
And so I kind of was on my own a little bit. I had my best friend, who's still my best friend today, he moved when I was 10. And so like from, I think, 10 until like 14, I really just didn't have a lot of friends, you know, and just kind of like figured it out on my own.
Right. Did that make you close to the siblings? Were the siblings close? Because they were doing the same thing or no?
No, because my brother and I, my oldest brother and I are 12 and a half years apart, so he was pretty much out of the house by the time I was like 9.
Right, before you remember.
And my
much.
Other brother, Keith, he's 3 and a half years older than me, and just we hated each other growing
really?
Up.
Really?
Just, I mean, he pounced on me like the Wonder Years, you know what I mean? Like there was no, I
and
mean,
there was
wasn't
a
even
sister a sister in between the two of you.
No, she's the second oldest. She's
so
nine
brother,
and a half
years. Sister, yep. Brother, you.
Yep.
Okay,
that's exactly it.
So you and the one closest to you hated each other.
Yeah, absolutely.
Just constant,
just
brother fighting.
Oh, I wasn't even fighting. It was just pounding.
You were just taking a beating.
Yeah. I always joke. I'm like, I don't know how to fight, but I can take a beating. I'm like, this guy will not go down. I'm like, another thing, you know?
Yeah, that was prepping you for comedy, honestly.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Like, honestly, this doesn't hurt that bad.
Right. But yeah.
What was it? And was it just one of those kind of brother relationships where you would... Like you would just wouldn't not see it coming, or would you poke his?
He didn't like my personality, so my brother he just didn't. I mean,
that's the most overarching. Like, what'd you guys fight? No, he just didn't like who I was.
No, he didn't like my soul. He didn't care for who I was as a person.
He didn't like the things I said, and
I got
did.
Plenty of feedback from him. And he made it perfectly clear I was not welcome in his life. So my brother was born. I forget what the term is, but he had basically is the umbilical cord around his throat.
Oh, yeah.
And then they cut off the oxygen. So he was born with a couple of learning disabilities. It just takes him a little bit longer to, like, you know, he'd sit down and focus and read.
Okay.
And I, like, had this, like, crazy IQ and was, like, in magnet schools and gifted schools my whole life.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was just kind of like this very opposite kind of, like, he has the most street smarts I've ever met of anybody. You know what I mean? Like, let's not go down this alley. Let's, like, you know, and he's a paramedic and he can, like, stick his finger in gunshot wounds and like has like this unbelievable street knowledge, whereas I'm just like, give me a book and I'll figure it out. Mm-hmm. You know, I'll YouTube it.
Yeah.
And so we just have very opposite personalities. He's very quiet. We call him like the silent ninja. Like you don't even know when he's in the room. And I'm just like walking to a room like just like this, you know, fireworks show is going off. So I think we just had a clashing personality. Yeah. We get along great now.
I was going to say, when did the bridge form between the two of you?
I think it was like, I mean, it wasn't that long ago, to be honest. Really? I think it was like after college.
Yeah.
You know, and I kind of realized, you know, I think I grew up a little bit and realized that, you know, he's his own person and has his own personality. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and we just kind of like outgrew it. But, right. You know, we definitely butted heads, man. I mean, it was just...
Big part of your childhood.
Oh, dude, just threw me in a dryer, you know. Was like, and thankfully, he couldn't figure out how to turn it on. You know?
Like, listen,
like, I mean, there's even
harsh.
A dryer sheet in there.
I've never been more thankful for your learning disability than right now.
Right.
I don't mean to be mean, but I'm so glad you didn't figure out how to turn that on.
I'm just in here with Snuggle the Bear right now. I'm like, what is happening? But yeah, he was pretty brutal. So
so I'm always curious about because I grew up with just the one sister, and we were pretty close because we were raised by a single dad. So like siblings in that scenario, a lot of time you're like, listen, if we don't have each other, we got nothing.
Right. Yeah.
My dad worked for the airline union and worked a lot of hours, so
sure.
We could eat and such. And yeah, very casually eat and such.
Survive and whatnot.
Yeah, I got it. And so we were close, but we were also close in age range. So sometimes I'm curious about the relationship between the youngest and a kid that's 12 years apart, because you don't know them at all then.
Yeah.
So you don't really have like the foundation of having a childhood together.
Right.
But are you close now? Do you have a relationship now?
Not really, no.
Is that weird to you? That you just have a brother?
I mean, when we're at family parties, we get along. He's been to my shows, a ton of shows. He's been very supportive.
Yeah.
If I needed him, he would be there. But like, I don't, like, we've never really taken the time to kind of, like, get to know each other,
right.
Like, very much. And I think, I don't know, I think eventually it might happen, mm-hmm. but, like, he's got 5 kids.
Right.
He is a very high-ranking officer. You know, he has a lot of responsibilities. So I don't, like, it's not like, man, I wish I knew my brother. It's just like, it just hasn't really, we haven't had the time. We live 2,300 miles away.
Right.
But when we get together, we laugh. We have a great time. He saved my life one time.
What?
Yeah, he did. Yeah. He saved my life. He was giving me a ride to school, and he had this old, like, Plymouth Duster. Mm-hmm. And we were turning left onto 87th Street in Chicago. And the door flew open on his car. The door flew open.
The passenger door flew open. How old are you right now?
I'm probably 9 or 10.
Okay.
And he's taking me to school. And, he drove muscle cars. So he was, like, making this turn quick. That door flew open, and out I was going. And he literally grabbed me by the hand.
What?
And yanked me back
like
in.
The Rock.
Yeah. I mean, it was like Fast and Furious. Yeah. I'm like, you know, it was crazy, and we still talk about it to this day. You know, so I've got great memories with my brother.
One very good memory.
Yeah, one very good memory of me not dying.
That's such next level of like the mom who, when the groceries go forward, puts her hand there.
Yeah,
or the kid goes forward. Your brother literally reached out and saved you from flying out a door, which would have surely killed you.
Yeah, and we also had this weird. I don't know what the word is, but so one day I was playing in a basketball game and I got tangled up with a dude and fell and broke my jaw.
Mm-hmm.
And he swears to this day that he felt it. We have some type of symbiotic relationship where like he actually felt it, and like he got I couldn't get a hold of my parents, so they called my brother and he ended up picking me up, and he's just like, I knew that one of my brothers had broken his jaw. He's like, I don't know, it was the weirdest thing.
Crazy.
He's like, yeah, and I don't know if it's ever happened again, but it was like one of those like weird connections.
Yeah.
He's like, because he had broken his jaw when he was a kid, and he's like, I got this huge pain in my jaw, and I'm like, why do I just feel like somebody broke their jaw?
Wow.
And sure enough, I had.
Yeah, it's weird.
Yeah.
And that's interesting to me that you had that and he saved your life, and you're like, man, we're not very close.
He probably listens to this podcast. He probably listens to like every podcast I ever do. And he's just
he knows you're
I
doing
love
it.
My brother.
Yeah, he knows you're doing it right now.
So yeah.
I thought we were so close.
He's also the funniest.
I felt your jaw break.
He's also the funniest guy in our family.
Is like, he?
Oh, I mean,
Well, the comedian is never the funniest.
Right.
Yeah.
Isn't that so funny how that works out?
Yeah.
Yeah, he
I had someone I was back up. So I grew up in Federal Way, Washington, which is right next to Tacoma. So last weekend I was in Tacoma. I had high school friends like, man, you were not funny in high school. Like,
really?
Not even like, you weren't that funny. I didn't see this. Just like, no, you weren't funny. And I was like, well, some of it's because you didn't talk to me then. Yeah. And now you're like, I know this comedian. But yeah, we don't usually the signs. There's some exceptions, but usually the signs of who you think would be a stand-up comedian are not what you think they would be.
Yeah, I was a class clown from start to finish.
Oh, you were?
Start to finish.
Oh, all right. Well, there we go.
Yeah, I needed was attention funny. Pretty early on. Yeah.
Well, do you think that came from being the youngest kid?
I think so. I think a lot of comedians are the youngest in their family. I've seen that quite a bit. But I also think that, like, the first time I made a group of people laugh, there was something about it that made me just want to keep doing that.
Sure.
And I didn't stop. And when I was actually writing about this the other day, because, like, certain teachers, like, hated me because I was so disruptive, but I also got really good grades because I was smart, and so it was like this nightmare combination.
Interesting.
But there were other teachers who like tolerated it and even like enjoyed my sense of humor, and I loved those teachers.
Right.
So if I hated a teacher, I often did poor in a class because I was like resentful of it. But if I loved it, like if they loved my sense of humor and got me, like my fifth grade teacher, Mrs. Morley, she got me. She laughed at my jokes. She's like, all right, settle down. And I would respect the classroom versus like Mrs. Ludwig, who was just like hated my guts.
Awful. Yeah, I definitely, we had this one teacher, Ms. O'Connor, and you know how like in elementary school, second grade, they would like, you would find, I don't know if they did this, but the way we would find out your classes, they would post them. Like, they would literally, we would go, like, there would be 2 weeks before school, they would post the classes, like, on the windows outside of our school office.
Yeah.
And so there'd be a day where we all knew went up there, and we were, and there, you always knew who got Miss O'Connor's class, because there would be a group of second graders crying. And because when you get a bad teacher in elementary school, your next 10 months is garbage.
Oh, yeah.
You just ruined. I remember she would smoke in the parking lot and just kind of like stare in at her kids. Yeah. She would like kind of like during recess, like she would go do smoke. And I remember she scratched a couple kids. You know?
Jesus, yeah.
All stuff that kind of flew in the 90s, but not anymore.
Mrs. Ludwig was so bad that my mom finally had to go and threaten her. Like it was bad. She did not like, and we to your point, like in seventh grade we were supposed to get Mr. Mankowski, and this guy was a huge pushover.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden he like transferred out of that school. We got Mrs. Ludwig twice. Bro, fourth and seventh grade.
Oh,
and finally I'd come home crying because this lady like was
you don't know at the time, but
she was like abusive to me. And I'm coming home, I'm in tears, and my mom's like, well, Mrs. Ludwig said this to me today, and she's like, I'll be right back, baby.
Yeah.
You know, like my mom, like a black mom, I'll be right back, baby. I'm going to talk to Mrs. Ludwig. And she went in there, and that lady she didn't even talk to me for the rest of the school year.
Yeah, it's so funny, that teacher stuff, like, you get, oh, man. And I remember speaking to the siblings, like, you know, I had older siblings, so they would, like, warn me. Mm-hmm. Like, and you'd be, like, grieved together. Like, oh, you got Mr. Engelbertson. Oh, yes, that's great. Oh, Miss Knapp, sorry.
Yeah.
See you next summer.
Oh, yeah.
You're going to hate all of this.
And then I went to Catholic high school. Same thing, man. You got that nun.
That's a different level.
Nobody wanted Sister Helen.
Yeah.
Oh, God, are you kidding me?
Because then you have mean and normal discipline and the pressures of education and religion mixed in.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Which really takes it to a different level.
And I was Lutheran. So I had no idea what they were talking about. I'm like, I'm just like Diet Catholic. I don't.
Lutheran's not even Diet Catholic. Yeah. Lutheran is founded by the guy that was like, hey, Catholic, we're out.
Real quick.
Yeah.
Here's the 99 things you're doing wrong.
Yeah, exactly. There you go. Yeah.
And the OCD means like you couldn't find one more thing just to get an even 100.
Here's the 99 things. You got 100? Nope. I have 99 problems with you.
Yeah.
So yeah, to roll in there is to roll in some real enemy territory, at least amongst Christians. That's funny. So did your older siblings go to different school? I'm trying to figure.
Yeah. So like
they didn't have the same education process as you?
No. So here's what happened. So my oldest brother and sister went to public high school.
Mm-hmm.
My brother, who had kind of some learning disabilities, they found out that the Catholic school actually had a special kind of course for people with learning disabilities.
Okay.
So they sent him to Catholic high school, and then they sent me to Catholic high school because by the time I got to high school, our neighborhood had changed and was no longer a safe neighborhood.
Oh, and the public school
had a lot of gangs in it.
They're like, the Catholics will keep you safe.
Yeah, so they're like, look, we're going to just send you to Catholic high school because they couldn't send me to the public high school because I would there
just
been
in the
like,
gap between your sister and you.
Yeah,
it had gotten that bad.
Yeah, because well, what we experienced, and it was basically like what they call white flight, and so like one black family moved into our neighborhood, and everyone left the neighborhood, and we didn't. We were just like, well, we're not racist pieces.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
and my dad worked for the city, and he needed to live in the city, and he's just like, I'm not gonna like move just because you know our neighborhood changed. You know what
right.
I mean? But when the landscape of the neighborhood changed, then you had a lot of Latino gangs, a lot of black gangs that were all in the public school
yeah.
now, and I and they were just going after white kids. You know what I mean? So they sent me to Catholic school. Just to kind of like be safe,
right?
So.
Did your family still live in that neighborhood, or did they?
No, they moved in 2000, but we were literally the last white family to move out of that neighborhood.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. So I grew up. So I always joke that I've been a minority my whole life because I grew up in an Irish Catholic neighborhood and I'm English Protestant,
right?
And then it became a black neighborhood and I'm white. You know, I'm just like, yeah. For all you listeners out there,
yeah, yeah. Just in case you weren't sure,
my name is Ken.
That's awesome. So the baby of the family though, was that an issue? Were mom and dad checked out? Were they still pretty
engaged?
Yeah.
Yeah. They were like they were done.
Yeah.
Yeah. I remember at one summer I shaved my head like
it's foreshadowing.
Yeah, I don't know, I'm bald, completely bald now.
That's
where I screwed up. like Edward Furlong in Terminator. Like I had the sides and the back shaved and like the top like it took him like 3 weeks to notice. Like, I almost had to shave it again. And then
like
finally, like...
parents, it's growing back.
Yeah, they're like, what did you do to your hair? I'm like, finally, you get it, you know? Like, but, that, like, that was, like, the height of my rebellion, is that I shaved my head. I was such a dork. Like, I didn't do drugs. I didn't start drinking. I was just like, shave my head.
To not notice the shaved head, it means they literally just weren't looking at you.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's exactly what it was.
Not they weren't listening to you. They literally weren't even looking.
Oh, they'd go on they were going on vacations now. And they never did that with my other siblings. Like, they're just like, yeah, whatever. He'll figure it out.
Yeah. It's a real thing. Even if you just have two. Because even though I was the youngest of the two. But it was, you know, we didn't come from a big family, but there was only one parent. So it was enough that my dad, by the time my sister was like in high school, it's like, all right, I'm done. Like,
yeah.
I was talking with him last week. We were driving up to Oregon and he was asking me, he's like, you have good people skills because he gets very shy. And I was like, well, a lot of it, Dad, I learned in junior high. Like I would, every day I would go to the lunchroom and I would like.
Are you my dad?
Yeah. I would.
Do you know where my dad is at?
No, I would ask people for money. Not like panhandling, but pretty much panhandling.
Yeah.
And I was like, hey, because I didn't have any money. So I was like, hey, can I get a dollar or whatever? And my dad was like, why would you do that? I was like, because you didn't give me lunch money. He's like, no, I give you lunch money. And I was like, no, Dad, absolutely.
Yeah.
You came to my junior high maybe 3 times.
Yeah.
And that's where you fill up the lunch card, you know? Right. And you never had cash. And he's like, well, he didn't even know. He paid for me and my sister went to the same college.
Yeah.
And he paid for all of her college and none of mine.
Yeah.
But until maybe a year ago, just realized that he paid for none of mine.
Really?
He was like, no, I pay the University of Washington all the time. And I was like, yeah, Jessica's tuition, not mine. You literally just that last kid. He's like, I'll just get him through the big thing. So by the time I was in like, you know, upper middle school, high school.
Yeah.
He was vacationing, sometimes with Jessica while I see.
What's going on here?
Yeah. He was like, I guess this is normal when you're the youngest. We just have a totally different life.
Yeah.
A totally experience. So your parents were similar, just kind of checked out.
My older siblings had it worse than I did because, like,
how so?
Because my parents didn't know how to be parents yet.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? So, like, they got the corporal punishment, the spankings, and all that. And I didn't really get that much because it was just like, we're over it. You know, we don't need to do all that stuff. You know, like, we really don't care how this kid turns out.
That's very true. I can say that as a dad, that you kind of lose some of the zeal.
Yeah.
The tenacity of, like, every little thing is. And some of it, because you realize it doesn't work, and some of it you realize, like, man, it's not as important as I thought it was.
Right.
You know?
Right.
They'll figure it out.
Like, if it was something serious, like if I stole something, or, like, something, like, major, then, like, then there would be some serious consequences. I came home drunk one time in high school, and it was like, you're grounded for the next 2 weeks.
Okay.
You know? And it was just, and then I actually came home, threw up all over the bathroom, and they didn't clean up the puke. They waited for me to wake up the next day, and then I had to clean up.
That's a good punishment.
Oh, it was the worst.
Yeah, because it's even worse that next day.
Yeah, I'm hungover, and they were all making fun of me.
Kenny!
But it was like, it was 2 weeks, and then I missed, like, I missed our high school championship game because I was grounded. And then I'm like, come on, you gotta, like, it's a championship game. I'm like, don't have to tell you, buddy. You know, you're done. And I'm like, oh, man, you know.
Yeah. So do you have a different relationship with your parents than the older siblings then?
You know, I can't speak for them, but I kind of feel like they're like, well, mom and dad, and we never played catch, and like, well, like, my dad worked two jobs. He was 80 hours a week, and my mom was
what
like,
what was his other job? He was a fireman.
He was an electrician. So firefighters have 2 days off in between shifts.
Yeah.
And a lot of times they'll become a painter or a roofer or construction.
Yeah.
And my dad picked up electrical work, and so he did electrical, you know, additions.
So he worked every day.
Yeah, he worked every single day.
Yeah.
And so, you know, he wasn't around a lot. Mm-hmm. And I think my older siblings kind of like had some resentment with that. Maybe they didn't, but I kind of get that feeling. Whereas I got to go to college for free. You know what I mean? I got to go to Catholic high school for free. And like, I understood like the sacrifice that he was making.
Mm.
And, you know, my dad would come home like dog tired, smelled like fire.
Right.
You know, who knows what he had seen the night before. And I'd be like, you want to throw the football around? He's like, ugh. You know, and he did when I asked. But we never went on fishing trips. We never like did that dad stuff. And I don't know. I kind of feel like it turned out okay. But I didn't like miss that stuff because I respect my dad more than any other man because he did what he had to do to take care of his family.
Right.
And my dad came from like this horrible abusive childhood, and he is like a self-made man. I mean, he owns properties all over. He's, you know, he did it, you know, and he didn't have to like, you know, like let his past dictate his future.
I think that's good perspective. That it's something that I've been trying to do more as a kid, as my, you know, my parents' child, is to just be more empathetic to their upcoming, you know, what they, because really you just want to, you want to do better than what you were given as a parent, you know, and but that's not to say that they had it all bad. So when I look back at some of my dad's flaws and even now some of his personality flaws and then challenges, and then I think about what he had with his dad and his situation, and you go, okay, I get it.
Yeah.
You try and just be a little more empathetic, like, they're not. Sometimes we can forget that our parents are humans.
That's exactly it. They're just people.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they don't. And parenting doesn't really come with a book.
No.
You know, and so like
and the books they write are real bad.
They're terrible. They're written by people that don't have kids. Yeah. Right? But I, you know, a couple of years ago I got sober, and and I remember I came home sober for the first time, and I was like telling him how great I feel and how much my life has changed. And my dad's like, well, just, you know, remember this feeling when you fall off the wagon. And I was just like so crushed by that.
Whoa.
And so it took me a couple days, and finally he and I went out to lunch, and I'm like, look, man, I gotta tell you, like, that really sucked. I'm like, that really, really hurt my feelings that you said that. And he was like, Ken, I'm sorry. He's like, I didn't mean anything by it. I go, I just feel like you set me up for failure already. Mm. He's like, that's not it. He goes, I know everyone that's tried has fallen off at least once, and that's all I meant. I'm like, well, then say that then.
Yeah.
And that's when we had that conversation, which was, he's like, Ken, this stuff doesn't come with a book.
Right.
He's like, you know.
He said that?
Yeah. He's like, I did, you know, as parents, we do the best that we can. But when I look at, like, his mom was an alcoholic, his dad skipped town, like, he was a war baby, you know what I mean? Like you know, so, like, you know, he's been working two jobs since he was 15. He had to raise his sister. So, like, there's, like, when you, to your point, when you start empathizing with where they came from, like, look, we're alive. We did it. We're college educated. You know, like, we made it.
Absolutely.
You know, so, you know, at the end of the day, it's like, they did a pretty good job. But I think as people, it's hard to realize that until you become an adult yourself.
Yeah.
And especially when you become a parent yourself, which I'm not, but I mean,
it's one of the real challenges that I feel like in my adult life is now trying to figure out what my relationship with my parents is like.
Yeah.
Because they're on the golden years of their life. You know, my mom essentially was kind of like, for the most part, MIA for like a good decade, like 5 to 15. Which are big years for you.
She got out of the joint.
Yeah. It wasn't an issue. I think she was living in her own prison.
Yeah.
But those were all self-inflicted wounds, and she would be honest about that. But you know, we're close now.
Yeah.
And, like, I stayed at her house when we were up in Tacoma, and just trying to formulate, like, okay, I would never choose a relationship with this person.
Sure.
Like, because we would never cross paths, and we don't have a lot of natural, other than the fact that we're related, we don't have a ton in common.
Right. Yeah.
So then trying to figure out, how those conversations were, especially when it's something like that. I think that's really brave and important that you said that to your dad, because I would have been nervous to say something like
I was dreading it, but I knew that I had to say it.
Yeah.
And I think that was part of the growth for me, is to be able to like have this communication, because at some point the focus switches from parent to like friend. You know what I mean? Like, not, you know, like we're parent, you're my parent, but at some point now you're done parenting.
Right.
I've got the skills and the values and principles that I have, and I got to go live my life. But now I got to kind of like set up boundaries with you guys.
Yeah.
And, you know, I've done that. I've done a lot of work with my mom because my mom and I have a very kind of like, we've got a good relationship, but like I've got to put a lot of boundaries. I literally had to sit down with my mom and explain show business to her because she just didn't understand why I wasn't in every commercial, why I'm not on Saturday Night Live, why I'm not like, you know what I mean? So I finally
You should do Fallon.
Yeah.
You should be on the Tonight Show.
I don't know. I just get on the Tonight Show. Just get on it, you know? And now what I did is like now I just lie, you know? Like oh, yeah, I'm going to be at Lestat's on Tuesday and, you know, perform. How much does it pay? $1,000. Yeah, $1,000, yeah. That's good money. Yeah, I'm pretty excited about that. Yeah. See, every show I make is $1,000.
I couldn't do that to my mom because then I would have to pay for everything.
Missed
$1,000, huh?
Yeah.
On a Tuesday, you're buying.
Yeah. I did do that with my parents one time, though. Before I became a full-time comedian, I had a very high-paying corporate job, and I remember one time we were out at the Home Depot and we're shopping for fountains, like, or it's not fountains, sinks, faucets, that's
there
the word,
go.
Sorry.
We got there.
So we're like, yeah, it took me a minute.
Fountain,
you can edit that, right? Yeah.
Faucets,
fountains,
sinks.
Waterfalls, a water cannon.
We got a toilet, is what we got. You know, the things you drink from in
I've
your kitchen.
I've named every plumbing thing in that aisle. So we're looking at faucets, and my mom is like, keeps like pointing me to these like cheap plastic faucets. And so finally, I'm like, well, I'm going to get this like nickel plated bulb. Like, it's just so expensive. And I turned and I looked at her and I go, I'm rich. She goes, I'm sorry. I'm like, I go, I have more money than I'll ever need to spend. I go, I'm a single guy and I make this amount of money. I go, I'm just going to buy this faucet. And then like, I just look at my dad. I'm like, oh no. He's like, well, Mr. Rich. You know? I was like, oh, no. And so for like the next year and a half, that's all I ever heard was, well, why don't we have Ken pay for it? He's rich. And I'm like, oh, God.
I'm rich.
It's like one of those things that came off the tongue, and it was just like as soon as I said it, I'm like, well, I'm just a pile of
Yeah, I any amount of money, if I ever actually make money, I will keep it a secret. I will keep it so secretive because I will never be able to spend time with him anymore.
Oh, yeah.
Hey,
yeah.
We're going on vacation. You guys want to come? Oh, yeah. You want me to come?
Yeah.
I wonder why.
Yeah. Just push the check over.
Yeah, I know my family. They are milkers. And that's why I was so good at asking for money in the lunchroom so many years ago.
Well, I was just talking to Preacher Lawson. So Preacher was a finalist on America's Got Talent.
Mm-hmm.
Overnight success, they call it, right? So he's been working for many, many years.
Yeah,
he's a great comedian.
After 15 years of hard nights and...
But now he's got a great career. He's making good money. He goes, you have no idea who comes out of the woodwork once you have a little bit of cash in your pocket. He's like, it's just crazy. He's like, I'm your cousin, three times removed. Yeah, it's Marcus. Like, okay. You know, I'm starting a business. No, you know.
Oh, is there a GoFundMe? I'll put some money into it right now.
Of course
I'm interested. Let me in. Ground level.
Yeah, it's a little crazy, you know, when people get like that. So. Yeah.
So it seems like you're doing the best with what you can with the siblings and the family now.
Yeah.
Where are you at as far as, and I know, you know, your girlfriend's in the room, but eventually you want to have kids? You want to give them some more? How many grandkids do they have now?
They have 14 nieces. They have 14 grandkids.
14 and counting? Are the other siblings having more?
Well, it's like my oldest nieces. My oldest niece and I, because my brother and I are only 12 years apart. My oldest niece and I are only 8 years apart.
I was going to say, do you have
So she's got like three kids. And then my second oldest niece.
You have nieces with kids.
Yeah, I have two. And that's part of the 14. So like my parents now have five great-grandchildren. You know what I'm saying? So they're fine with grandkids.
Yeah.
There's
none of that pressure. When are you going to make us the grandparent?
No, the pressure I get from my mom is that she doesn't want me to be alone.
Right.
You know what I mean? And
Jen.
I found Jen and seem cool.
How long have you guys been together?
7 months now.
Okay.
But we've known each other for 6 years.
Oh.
So I finally broke the friend zone.
Right.
you know.
That was a long friend zone you put him in.
It was a slow burn. Yeah. It took a while.
Yeah. That's like breaking out of prison.
Yeah.
Ching, ching, ching.
I Shawshanked her.
Yeah, exactly. Just a little bit. That sounds like an innuendo, folks. It's not. Yeah. You would think that it is.
It took 20 years of that hammer rock or whatever.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Rock hammer.
I always said it would take 50 years. He did it in 17. Yeah. Whatever. Yeah. That's actually the analogy that I always use for show business. So you can tell your mom that. When you have your breakthrough, there's no breakthrough.
Yeah.
Every night I go chip away.
Yeah.
And some nights I get a bigger chunk, but yeah, it's still just a chunk.
And the best advice I ever got, we were talking about him before the show, Brad Garrett. So you and I work Brad Garrett's club in Las Vegas. Beautiful club. Mm-hmm. One of the hardest clubs to get into.
Robert from Everybody Loves Raymond.
Yes.
Everybody. And Eeyore in the upcoming.
Christopher Robin.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, check it out.
He was born to play Eeyore.
Oh, yeah.
He looks like
Eeyore. If he didn't land that part, it's fire everybody, dude.
When we were there, he was telling us about, because he has another show coming out this fall.
Yep.
And that day, Romano had tweeted him, and it was like, hey, have you guys seen Romano or Brad's new sitcom? Better hurry.
I love it.
I just liked the idea that these two still squabble.
Oh, yeah.
Like playfully, you know.
Yeah.
But anyways, he gave you some show business advice.
But I reached out to him and I was just like, hey, I'm, you know, he's kind of been a mentor. And I was like, I'd love any advice. Like, I feel like I've got some chops as far as like the stand-up goes. I go, but I don't understand how the business works. And He's like, you have to let go of the idea of, quote, making it.
Hmm.
He goes, if you're getting up every night and you're telling jokes and you're getting a little bit of money in your pocket, he's like, you've made it.
Hmm.
He goes, the people that I see that don't are the ones that are just focused on
what's next,
what's bigger, why don't I have this? And he's like, and it eats them alive. He's like, you know, it's not to say that you don't want to, like, reach that, you know, aspire to get that late night spot or aspire to get a series regular, whatever your goals are. It's important to have goals, but to get, like, consumed by, like, quote unquote, not making it, it takes the fun out of this thing.
Yeah, the ambition is good.
Yeah.
That, why don't I have this?
Right.
Because we, you know, that's in all of us. I can struggle with it. And a lot of time, like, when I run that stuff starts running through my head and stuff, I'm like, first off, this doesn't help. Second off, this is a miserable way to live.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
It's much better when you can genuinely celebrate a friend's success, you know?
Yes.
Or like, you know, there's once a year we get to, 15 comedians, new faces, get a public thing that I didn't get, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Just once a year, and I can go, unbelievable, and I'll start looking at them, that person,
right.
You know?
I told Jen, I go, it's angst week in comedy. Like, that's all it is. I go, it's like, we're happy for our friends that got it.
Mm-hmm.
That's exciting that they got this big showcase opportunity in Canada.
Yeah.
I go, but why not me, God? And
again,
then when you look in the mirror, like, did I submit? Did I do enough to, like, network? There's a lot of things more I can be doing.
Absolutely.
You know, all of us. But
always.
But I don't get caught up on that whole, like, you know, why aren't I here? You gotta stay in your lane. You gotta put blinders on and just keep going.
I think it's good, especially and this competition, because there is competition if you're in the sense that, you know, we live in a merit based thing. We're all competing for spots,
right?
We're all competing, so it's an easy thing to get caught up into. And the only outlet for me is to do everything that is not comedy. Like, I'll go do stand up and then just focus on healthy relationships and my family and kids and all that kind of stuff, you know.
And it's different for us because, like, you know, my dad, you know, you take a lieutenant's test and now you're a lieutenant. You take a captain's test and now you're captain. There's no testing
in
show business. You keep, you know, and I told to Jen this earlier, I go, at the end of the day, I just got to keep writing. You know what I mean? I just haven't written the 10 jokes that are going to get me to whatever level I think I need to be at. And that's the only thing I can control. The only thing I can control is just keep writing and keep working, keep getting.
Yeah, Hollywood is an industry with gatekeepers.
Yeah.
And they may let you in and they may not.
Right.
Plus, there's no really, I mean, AGT is maybe an exception, but there's not a lot of things that can make you an overnight success anymore. There's no more Carson's Tonight Show, so.
No.
So do you, get back to that, do you want to have a family? You want to get married, have kids? I'm sorry.
Get
married.
Yeah, I've married once before for 3 years.
Okay.
I'm divorced, but that was 6 years ago.
No kids.
I would get married again for sure. I loved the idea of marriage. I'm not against it. I think a lot of divorced guys get a bad rap. I'm like, oh, like, no, I would absolutely get married if it was the right situation. As far as kids go, I don't know. You know, I had lunch with Tom Dreesen. So Tom Dreesen opened for Frank Sinatra for 14 years, and he goes, any comedian that tells you that he did this for his kids is full of shit. He's like, we do it for ourselves. Yeah. And so, like, one of the things that I'm concerned about as far as being a father is, like, how present can I be in my kids' life? And I think it's important to be present in their life. And for me to, like,
I don't, because I'm a comedian and a dad. Right,
yeah. Plus, your dad didn't even give you lunch money. Please. So, I mean, what, you know.
It's not hard for me to be better, is what I'm saying. I don't even have to be present as long as there's some, they can have some, you know, some chicken strips on Wednesdays.
So I think it's important for me to be able to have a life where I can be present and be there for my kids and not be that guy that's, you know, on the road 40 weeks a year. And
it seems like, because I guess the first question I was going to have was, is there anything, because I'm interested in this idea from people, is there anything from your family experience that you feel like I want to be a dad to redeem this, or there's like just kind of in you of like, no, I want to be a dad. I want to raise a child. I want to pass on with them. I want to have them around. Is there any of that to you, or is it more like, if it happens, it happens.
If it happens, it happens.
And if it doesn't, conflict with, or yeah. And if I can do this and not be gone 40 weeks a year, because you're a real road dog. You're out a lot.
Yeah, I'm out a lot, but you know, I think it's again, and I think it also depends on the person that you marry, like what the agreement is between the two of them, which is ultimately what led to my divorce. Is like, I'm never going to be a full-time comic. And then like a year into marriage, I'm like, oh, full-time comic, you know? And so...
Remember that chat we had about never...
Fingers were crossed under the table. But I think it really depends on what you and your partner agree to. And if it's like, look, I'm going to go do 40 weeks in the year. I'm going to send this much money home. You got to raise the kid. Then that's what it's going to be. But as a father, I know me. And I know I'm not going to want to be away from my kid. You know what I mean? So I think that's kind of like, I got to either be all in with the fatherhood. I mean, it doesn't mean necessarily quit comedy, but maybe find a different avenue, mm-hmm. whether it's writing or acting or whatever.
It's a lot more flights home is what it is.
Yeah.
For me, because it's not unlike your dad's schedule of when he was doing like work 3 days, home 4 days, work 5 days, home 2 days, those kind of things. So,
but it's not one of those things.
It's not just like for this weekend example, I'm going to be in Colorado Friday through Sunday, come home, fly back to Colorado on Thursday.
Right.
If I were single, I'd be like, well, I'm just in Colorado all week.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah, that's exactly it.
So you find and you make it work.
Right.
For sure.
Yeah.
But before we end here, do you have anything that you do want to plug? I know you're working on the album. That's not out yet.
Yeah, not out yet.
You got a couple shows in L.A.?
Yeah, so I've got... you can always check out my radio show. It's called That's Effed Up with Kim and Ken. It's on the Dash Radio Network. If you download the Dash Radio app, you can get it wherever apps are available. It's also available on Slacker. If you have a Slacker downloaded, it's the only live comedy show on Slacker. Every Monday from 9 to 11, and then we replay it every Wednesday from 9 to 11. So check that out. My website has my schedule, kengar.com, and you can follow me on Instagram and Twitter at comedianKengar, not the magician. There's a magician named Ken Gar. Screw that dude, man. We've been battling it out for years. Finally, he emailed me, and I'm like, I win.
Yes, that's
you
amazing.
You emailed me first. But it's so great when I show up to a venue, and like it's just a picture of him on the... I'm like, not the right headshot, bro.
That's really funny. So we went... this is a side story. So I did a show the other day where they had the... It was me and Keith Johnson was on the show.
Yeah.
And they had printed out the pictures of who was going to be on it in, like, the back room. And he was like, I 10-1, they get the name, the face wrong. There's so many Keith Johnsons.
Yeah.
And we went, and he was like, told you it was wrong. And I looked at it, I was like... I know who that is. That's Dante. Dante is a comedian. You guys have been in the game for Dante. Is like, his name's not even Keith Johnson.
Right.
I don't know where this came from. It's not you. It's not a different Keith Johnson. It's a different human entirely. Anyways, thanks for doing the show, man.
Yeah,
thanks,
man.
Thanks for stopping
by.
Thanks for tuning in, everybody. If you have not done so already, please rate and subscribe. Follow us on all the social medias and share with all of your friends. Also, if you want to shoot us a note, you can email us at don'tmakemecomebackthere@gmail.com. Also, if you enjoyed this episode and you have not done so already, please go back and listen to all the episodes we've done before. Thanks so much, everybody.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.